Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 15th day, the Ides of... No, it isn't the Ides of December.
No.
It is not. The Ides on the, in December are the 13th. It is the 15th of December, Anno Domini 2018. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news, and I will start with passwords. It doesn't look like we're getting any smarter about our passwords. On Thursday, software company Splash Data released its annual list of top 100 worst passwords, and it includes some pretty obvious blunders. Coming in at number one is, you guessed it, 123456, and in second place is, yep, password. This is like the fifth year in a row these passwords have held the top two spots. Newcomers to the list include 666666, which is number 14, Princess, which is number 11, and Donald, which is number 23. Sorry, Mr. President, but this is not fake news. Using your name or any common name as a password is a dangerous decision, Splash Data CEO Morgan Slain said in a release. Hackers have great success using celebrity names, terms from pop culture and sports, and simple keyboard patterns to break into accounts online because they know so many people are using these easy-to-remember combinations. To compile its list, Splash Data evaluated more than 5 million leaked passwords, mostly from users in North America and Western Europe. The company estimates that about 10% of people have used at least one of the top 25 worst passwords, and about 3% have used 123456. Amazing.
7-8, that's better.
7-8 is better.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's 9-0 my luggage.
9-0 makes it even that much more stronger.
It's even stronger.
Why didn't you tell me my butt was so big?
Right. It's a real head-scratcher that with all these risks known and with so many highly publicized hacks, such as Marriott and the National Republican Congressional Committee, that people continue putting themselves at such risk year after year, Slain said. Celebrities and government officials aren't immune to choosing terrible passwords, a Wednesday report from Data Dashlane made plain. The top offender on that list is Kanye West, who revealed in an October meeting with President Donald Trump that his iPhone passcode is 000000.
Because you had to use 6 characters on the new phones.
Right. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is your password on the worst list? Your choices are, of course, maybe, nope, and none of my passwords are that long. Now, I know you'll have more to say about this, so if you scroll down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 15 December 18. Is your password on the worst list? And in fact, in that discussion is the entire list of 100 worst passwords, starting at number 100, which is bite me, and going to number 1, which is 123456.
With a Y?
No. That was probably 101, so don't use it. Happy is on there. Monkey is on there.
Happy is a monkey. Happy,
happy 34 monkey is not on there. But at any rate, those are all out there, and you should pay attention to that and not use any of them. Oh, number 3 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
9? Ooh, that's even better.
They're going all the way to 9. And that's... number 4 is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yep.
All right. One, hey, it's one stronger.
The usual rebuttal I get to telling people they shouldn't use such common passwords is, oh, I don't have anything anybody wants to steal. Or they can have, you know, I don't have any money. Well, not necessarily after money. They're after your identity, so
yeah,
they can get another credit card or sign out loans in your name.
Right.
Or just use your name to attack somebody else,
mm-hmm,
as anonymity. So
and you will get blamed for it.
Yeah.
And then you have to prove it wasn't you.
Yeah, and that doesn't just happen overnight.
That's right.
And, you know, it's the old, you can't prove a negative. I didn't do it. Prove it.
Prove you didn't do it.
I can't prove
you're
I
guilty
didn't
until
it.
Proven innocent in this case.
Right. And, of course, down to number 79 is trust no one.
You'd think that would be good, but no.
No.
It's a common phrase.
Even with a one.
Yep.
And that's what this is, with a one.
Yep.
Is not good.
There was one a few years ago that that sounded good until you thought about it. It was, there is no fate but what we make. That's a really long passphrase.
It is.
Except that's a very famous line from Kyle Reese in the Terminator movies.
Right.
His final message to Sarah Connor. And so, you know, we talk about passwords, and that's we're trying to stop using passwords and use either passcode or passphrase. Your password should never be a word, because the bad guys use a dictionary attack. They try every word in the dictionary in your password field. Right. And if your password is a word, it will be broken almost instantly.
Right. And you, mm-hmm. so you should use a phrase.
But don't use a phrase they can find in Bartlett's familiar quotes.
Right. Yeah. Don't use a phrase that everybody knows from a movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally, you know, rancid. You know, something very obscure is the best way to put it.
Right.
You know, I mean, titles from three different movies.
Right. Or you have a favorite song. Do not use that one. But if you have a song you hate, use yeah. that one. You know, that sort of thing is what you should do. Use an obscure quote from a movie.
Yeah.
Where does that staircase go? It goes up. Nobody knows that quote is from Ghostbusters. I do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use that as one of my bad phrases, just so you know.
Have you ever thought about sideways?
Yeah. But those are the things that work better. They're mm-hmm. long phrases. They're easy to remember, but people won't associate them with you. Everybody knows your favorite song. Everybody knows your favorite sports team. Everybody knows the quarterback of that favorite sports team.
Because you've posted it on Facebook.
But nobody posts the song maybe some people post the song they hate the most, but very few, Rob Linton does, but very few other people do.
Well, you know, even to a, you know, weird phrases like my favorite color is Ford.
Well, exactly. That's the other thing. The responses to security questions.
Oh, yes.
First, you have to lie. Mm-hmm. Second, lie creatively.
Yep.
What was your favorite automobile? Purple.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first car?
It doesn't care.
It doesn't care.
It's just looking for you to type in something so that when it asks you that question later, it matches.
Right. And so you don't have to tell the truth, and you shouldn't.
And if you use a password manager, you can have it generate a random password for those questions, too. Not just your password
right.
field, but the question field.
Well, that's the thing. Excuse me. There are so many other programs out there that you can use to generate passwords that you only have to keep one to get, you know, to use to get into that system. The rest can be all generated, like you say, through that program to get into all the different sites. So you don't have to use the excuse, oh, I can't remember all those different passwords. All right, learn one, use it on that particular program that will get into all those other programs that are far more secure and would take forever and a lifetime to try to break.
Right, right. It's not a terribly difficult thing to do. You watch people, you say to somebody, type in a password, and they freeze.
Yeah.
They make it way more important than it is.
Yeah.
And again, with those security questions, if they say, what's your favorite color, the computer doesn't care if you answer purple or lippity-doodle.
Apple pie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't, that's actually a color. It doesn't care.
But
so
then,
lie in such a way that nobody will guess the lie.
But you'll remember what you lied. Next,
yes.
When it comes
you write it yeah. down. You put it yep. in EnPass or LastPass or one of those.
What it, something
some
else.
Some password manager so that you will remember it. So when you go to your bank and your bank says, what's your favorite color? You look it up in EnPass or LastPass or some other password manager and type yep. in lippity-doodle.
There it is.
A lot of times we see our customers, we'll have a little password book, which is great, but when they change a password, they forget to cross off the old one. Or this password is on page 27. When I changed it, it was on page 105.
Yes, that's
so then I got to go through and find, you know, where did I change it?
That's what my friend does, and I owe him a phone call now that I'm feeling better. I owe him a phone call. But, yeah, it's you got to pay attention, and you got to be a little creative, but mostly what you got to do is lie when it comes to those security questions. And when it comes to your password, longer is better than shorter. Complex, as in uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and exclamation points, is better than not. And this whole leak speak business where you make threes instead of E's and sevens instead of T's, every hacker knows that. Don't use that. And but if you were to say happy 34 monkey, that's a, well, not any longer because we've used that for years as an example, but it's not a bad password. It's many characters. You should have an, you should have some sort of symbol as well. So happy 34 monkey with an exclamation point and a question mark is not a bad password at all.
No, I was listening to one of the security shows I listened to, and they were talking about these security questions and how horrible it is. But that's what you have to have for regular people, the questions. But they've run into a few sites where you can't make a custom question, so you have to pick from the questions they offer.
Right.
And when you pick a question, you have to pick from the answers they offer.
Oh, I hate that.
Oh, so that's worse. Yeah.
Which is even worse.
Oh, yeah. You might as well just,
go to a different site. No.
Yeah, just... Post a note on that site of the answers.
That's right.
I like some of the obscene passwords on that list.
Yeah.
So what's your password? F off.
Yeah, right. Right, but that's, you know, those are, again, that's a pretty common password, and people are going to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you want to be careful of those things. And people's names. Half this list is people's names. Half this list is number sequences.
Yep.
One of the passwords is ZAQ1 ZAQ1. Well, that's just running your hand over the left side of the keyboard.
Yep. It looks random, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you want to be fairly careful of those things. Blah blah is not a good password. Maverick is not a good password, particularly now that they're remaking Top Gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really not a good password. Computer. That should not be your password. Your password should not be invalid. So the computer comes back and says, "My password is invalid." you want to be careful of what you use. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is our friend Linda from Greece, New York. Linda, long time no hear.
Yeah, 2018 was not a good year for me.
I'm so sorry.
My mother just died, so I thought to myself, I got to call my friends again.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad you called.
Yes, our condolences.
How's your computers and your phones doing?
Well, okay, that's the thing. Steve, I just got a Mac 27-inch.
Oh, nice.
And have no idea how to use it. I'm 71. How does a 71-year-old learn a Mac?
Well, one of the things is if you're used to Windows, everything is kind of opposite. So when Microsoft copied the Mac OS initially, they put things on the other side. So on Windows, your My Computer and all your icons are on the left side of the screen. And on the Mac, they're often on the right side of the screen.
Uh-huh.
And your close button on the Mac is on the left side. And on Windows, it's on the right side. So all the controls are there. They're just in a slightly different place. There's two things you can get. There's the help menu. In every program, there's a help. And when you're on desktop, there's a getting to know your, yours will say iMac, which will go over some of the basics of the computer. And then there's an iBook you can download. Well, Apple Book now. They took the I off. They're getting rid of the I on everything.
Yeah, they are.
Except iPhone so far, because that's too iconic.
Boom. Thank you.
You can go to the bookstore and download the Apple's free user's guide. So they don't include a printed user's guide anymore, but there's free books in the bookstore for you to get to.
And how do you get to the bookstore?
It's often in your dock, or it's in the, depends on your dock, the launch pad, the little rocket ship icon. Is the launch pad, and so that brings up sort of like an iPhone interface. So people that are used to iPhones can get to... that interface, or the applications folder on the desktop, will get you that books program, and then on the side, I think it's on the right hand side, there's a category for Apple users guides. Once you get into the bookstore,
okay, I've got a problem. I've had several eye surgeries, and my eyesight is very blurry. So reading books is not an option anymore.
Well, electronic books are very handy because you can increase the font size.
on the how do I get those?
From the bookstore, the Apple bookstore on the computer.
Okay, okay. So is there, would you recommend going to the Apple store in Eastview to learn?
They have training classes. We do free seminars at our store, too. And there's the Apple Users Group, which is actually happening today. Our Saturday special interest groups and Q&A meetings are today near 12 Corners. And hopefully we'll have that YouTube stream running on the Apple Cider website. So applecider.org is the Apple Users Group website.
Okay.
At 1 o'clock today is the Green Apples, which is for
beginners.
Say that one more time.
Today at 1 o'clock is the Green Apples user group, which is for Apple beginners, Green Apples.
Okay, now where is that?
226 Ashbourne Road in Rochester.
Near 12 Corners.
Okay, yeah, well,
So when I get there around 3, after the show here, I usually get the YouTube stream up and running, so you can watch the stream, too.
Okay, okay. Yeah, because my old computer was Windows 7, and I was talking to my cousin, and he said to me, "Don't you have a Mac?" I said, "No." So I got a Mac for Christmas.
Oh, very nice.
And I said, "Give me the biggest screen." So I've got it here.
Yep, but you have to increase the font size so you can see it better.
Yeah, I know. Okay, now, I don't want to insult you, but what do you think of the Geek Squad at Best Buy? Would they help?
I don't know if they have free classes. They're more of a service center. So if you're having problems, you can go there for service if you bought it from Best Buy.
No, I didn't. My cousin lives in Massachusetts. So.
I was going to say, you're in Greece.
Yeah.
Does the community center out there in Greece have any classes out there?
Yeah,
you might want to call the town hall. And, I mean, they've got a beautiful community center out there now.
Yeah.
And check with them that they might have and offer classes out there on different programs and operating systems.
I'll be glad when 2019 shows up. I hated 2018.
Now, ironically, there is a really good learning website called lynda.com.
But it's with a Y.
With a Y.
So I just would like to remind you.
And they have some free stuff, but it is a subscription service. It's relatively inexpensive for learning. There's also the Mac Academy. There's Khan Academy, K-A-H-N Academy. They've got a lot of free training stuff online. So it's sometimes easier to do it online from the comfort of your own computer.
Yeah.
Also, one other thing that I would suggest, talking about Greece and that, you might also want to check the library. See what DVDs and learning tools they might have in their library that you could take out on loan. Different classes on how-to.
Yeah.
All different things to check out.
I went on YouTube, and there's a guy named David A. Cox.
Okay.
And he says, learning the Mac in an hour. Should I try that first?
Can't hurt.
There's another website.
The other thing is, hold on a second. Speaking of the Geek Squad, don't they come to your house? That might be best for her.
For repairs.
Oh, for repairs, not for teaching. Okay. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. There's a lot of those types of websites. MacMost is another one that does a lot of online courses. Many of them are free. Some of them you pay for. I'm looking for Apple's general help.
And there are also people like the Computer Wizard who come to people's homes, but I don't know if he does Macs. I'm sure he does, but I don't
think so.
That.
He brings them to me.
Does he?
Yeah.
Okay, then no.
Hey, Steve, you come to my house?
we do on-site service as well, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I'll even provide lunch if you come.
Yep, we've had that happen when I'm taking too long.
Well, in general, though, they charge. They're a business, and they charge.
Yeah. No, I know they do.
But yeah, check out the Apple Cider group, and like Steve said, I don't know how you get to it, but the stream should be live on their site
on the right hand side, YouTube live stream.
Oh, there it is, YouTube live video.
So that will show all the old videos.
When is this program going to be on the? How long does it take to? I used to know this.
Sure.
Your show, when will it be on the website?
Sound bites?
Yeah, but so I can play it again.
Generally tomorrow.
Okay. You can tell I haven't been on it in probably about a year and a half.
Right.
You can live stream it now, but and then I'll actually no. The YouTube is instant.
Right. The
podcast will be tomorrow.
Available right now.
Yeah.
But the podcast will be available online tomorrow.
Okay. Thanks very much, guys.
All right. Thanks, Linda. Have fun.
Have a good holiday.
Okay. Bye. Thanks. You too.
Bye. Bye. Yeah. It's harder to find people who will come to your house.
Looks like LinkedIn bought Linda. I don't know if I like that.
LinkedIn?
Yeah.
That's why.
We did have one texter call in and say, password manager. Do you know of a manager that can store its database on a local server, but does not do it in the cloud?
That does not do it. Well,
I think they all do.
You can pick, right? With many of them, you can actually pick.
The convenience of putting it on the cloud is then you can share your passwords between all your devices.
And the safer, because what happens if all of a sudden that you got all those passwords?
Well, a good
and the hard drive dies.
A good right. So you have to back up your vault anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And the good password managers encrypt the database before they put it on the internet anyway.
But yeah. To answer the question, KeePass does local storage. NPass does local storage, but you also have the option to I encrypt it quite heavily, thank you very much, and put it on my Google Drive.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a choice you make. Something called Pass, just Pass. Excuse me, I beg your pardon. Password Safe and my login vault.
And then Apple's keychain only does it locally unless you tell it to go on iCloud.
Right. So you can put it local, but then you need to, if you've got more than one device, like your phone,
yeah. You
need to copy it to that device. The reason I use nPass with heavy encryption saved to my Google Drive is so that I can get it on my phone, my tablet, my Chromebook, my desktop. So it's everywhere I need it to be.
Which is handy because if you want those complex passwords that are hard to guess, those are often hard to type on a little phone keyboard.
They're the worst.
So your password manager filling it in for you is really handy.
I have cursed myself ever since I got my new router and made a very complex password.
Yeah.
It was so easy to type on the computers and so very, very hard to type into the phones.
Oops. Especially when you have to switch between uppercase, lowercase symbols, which are all different keys.
Right. You want to be aware that your passwords are not how do I want to put this? Your passwords are not the only thing that keeps you safe, but they're the first line of defense. So when you have a password, make it complex. We've got another story later on about two-factor authentication being a problem now. But there's just a lot of bad stuff in terms of that. But when it comes to keeping yourself secure, a difficult password. And the other thing, of course, is make sure your password is unique on each site. Don't use the same password twice.
Right.
Because half the 90% of the breaches are not you, they're at the other end. So when Yahoo got breached, and when AOL got breached, and when Verizon got breached, and when banks get breached, you lose that password. And when you change it, if you've used it somewhere else, now you have to go to all those places to change it. Or leave yourself wide open to being hacked.
That's the one thing folks should concentrate on doing this upcoming year to start off a new year with a new way of doing, you know, their passwords.
New Year's resolution number one. Get a password manager and change all your passwords so they're unique. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites and member support of Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 35 minutes after the hour. We are sound bites.
So before you do that, we were talking about passwords earlier. A good password manager, and most of them do now, will let you or tell you if you reuse your own passwords. And you can go in and see if you've used the same password on multiple sites.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they call that password auditing.
Right. And don't forget, I don't think we have anybody in the line, but you can give us a call. We do?
Yeah, I told you. We have a gentleman call from Spencer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We were distracted.
Who's this?
I believe it was Mike from Spencerport.
Okay, Mike. Let's take Mike from Spencerport, New York. Hi, Mike. Sorry about that.
That's close. That's my middle name. My name is Larry.
Larry. We'll take Larry, Mike, Joe. Okay. We don't care.
I'm talking about passwords. I've always wondered, a lot of these sites that if you have the wrong password 3 or 4 times, they lock you out.
Yep.
Now, how do these robot computers get past that?
Many of them wait a certain amount of time before they release it again. So these computers are hitting millions and millions of sites. So they hit it 3 times, then they put it in the wait list. They go on to the next one. They put it on the wait list. They go on to the next one. They put it on the wait list.
Oh.
Computers don't care. It's all mechanical to them. So whether it happens in a tenth of a second or an hour and a half later, it's all the same to them.
And many times they're not filling in the password on the web form. They have found an exploit to access the password database at the other end directly. Either through a URL that isn't that encoded properly, or the password database has leaked.
Okay. Just always curious about that.
Yep. And for Windows, for example, the Microsoft has not changed the encryption algorithm since ever. I think certainly since Windows 98, and so everybody knows what that is. So if you can get at the password database inside Windows, which is not that hard to do. It's real easy to figure out what the passwords are.
I have some tools for that. So when someone forgets their Windows password,
yep.
So that's one of the nice things Microsoft has done. Wow, with Windows 10, they want you to create a Microsoft account online rather than have a local password only.
Right.
So then if you do forget your password, you can use the Forgot My Password links through Microsoft's website. But then all those Forgot My Password links are somewhat vulnerable because the bad guys can do it too. And so that's why you want to have unique passwords on every site. And don't make your hint too easy. So a lot of times when you type your password wrong, a hint will come up. Don't make the hint your password.
Yeah.
And don't make the password hint too easy.
Your hint should
be the 86 World Series winner. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right. Your hint should always be look in your password manager.
Yeah.
That should be your hint.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Larry. Bye bye. Yeah. Passwords are the single most difficult thing for people to manage, and I'm not entirely sure why.
Because you don't think you can do it. And it goes back to, though, I don't know anything about computers. So I'm not computer literate. I don't know anything. So, okay. Maybe learn a little bit would be nice.
Yeah.
All right. Before you get into that,
yep.
I'm going to answer another question that you asked me.
Yes.
In 29 years, have I ever failed you guys?
No, you never have.
Doing our show. Matter of fact, it'll be just about as close as you can get to Christmas,
right?
As we have ever come this close for our official Rumble show. And they are in the refrigerator fermenting as I speak.
Aging is the proper term when you're, is the politer term.
I don't know, but boy, this rum, I still had rum left over from last year.
Well, yeah.
I think it got a little stronger.
Got a little stronger, did it?
Because as I'm making it and I'm putting the rum in, my three dogs are sitting there watching me. And I put the rum in. And that sort of filled the room.
Yeah, I bet.
The three of them took off. It's like, they didn't like that smell. Boom, they left. Because, yeah, they're going to be good and strong this year. For sure. But you will have the rum balls. You guys will have rum balls on the show for next Saturday.
Very exciting.
As always.
Very, very exciting.
Not letting that down.
All right. Be sure to tune in next Saturday. It's going to be an interestingly different show. It's our once a year interestingly different show. All right. Verizon.
Not for this. I'm completely different.
Right. Well, if you're a Yahoo or AOL person and you have your email address to them, you might want to pay attention to this story. Verizon is parting ways with 10,400 employees in a voluntary separation program. Despite the Trump administration providing a tax cut and various deregulatory changes, they were supposed to increase investment in jobs and broadband networks. The cuts represent nearly 7% of Verizon's workforce and were announced along with a $4.6 billion with a B dollar charge related to struggles in Verizon's Yahoo and AOL business division. Verizon described the voluntary buyouts as well as ongoing Yahoo AOL failures in a Securities and Exchange Commission filing on Tuesday. You learn more about companies through the SEC filings than you do from their own stuff. The buyouts affect U.S.-based management employees in multiple business segments, not just Yahoo and AOL. Here's what Verizon says about its Yahoo AOL problem. Verizon's media business, branded Oath, has experienced increased competitive and market pressures throughout 2018 that has resulted in lower-than-expected revenues and earnings. These pressures are expected to continue and have resulted in a loss of market positioning to our competitors in the digital advertising business. Oath, Google. Oath has also achieved lower-than-expected benefits from the integration of Yahoo Inc. and AOL Inc. businesses. As a result, Verizon says it expects to record a non-cash goodwill impairment charge of approximately $4.6 billion, which is, of course, only $4.5 billion after taxes. That's right. They pay very little or no tax. In the fourth quarter of 2018, Verizon previously estimated Oath's goodwill balance at $4.8 billion, so the $4.6 billion charge will wipe out nearly all of Oath's goodwill value. As explained by NBC News, goodwill is calculated by subtracting the current fair market value of the assets and liabilities of an acquired company from the price that was paid to buy the company. Verizon purchased Yahoo for $4.5 billion in June of 2017 and AOL for $4.4 billion in June of 2015. Broadband and TV cable companies have been trying to gain share in the advertising and TV programming markets, but Verizon has fallen behind its biggest competitors in that regard. AT&T bought Time Warner this year. Comcast failed in its attempt to purchase 21st Century Fox properties, but it does still own NBC Universal. Verizon's media strategy has centered around Yahoo and AOL, but the former web giants haven't been able to compete effectively against Google and Facebook in the advertising market under Verizon's ownership. Verizon also created an online video service called Go90. Remember Go90? Nope, nobody does. But it announced Go90 shutdown in June of this year. So it might be time to get rid of those Yahoo and AOL email addresses while you still can. Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And if you do decide to get rid of those accounts, delete all the mail from your mailbox before you try to delete the account or before you abandon the account.
If you really want to have it, forward the ones you want to keep to your new email address.
Yep.
All I can remember is AOL was a great supply of floppy disks. Yeah.
CDs, too.
Yeah, CDs for coasters.
Yep.
But the floppies were great. You could, you know, put another label over them, erase them, and reuse them.
Cleaning the computer room the other day, which is not a phrase you'll hear from me very often, and I ran across a DVD for 1,000 free hours on AOL. I should use it while it's still good.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, we don't. Look, we're not saying that AOL and Yahoo are going away right away. But you know,
their days are numbered.
You know what they say: the race doesn't always go to the swift, but that's the way the smart money bets. So the idea is, if you're still on an AOL or Yahoo password now, while they're still viable things, is the time to get a Microsoft address or an Apple address or a Google address, and then. Tell all your people over the next few months to forward all to change your email address to them, and then you can forward all your email to them as well, and take any messages that you really, really, really want to keep from AOL and Yahoo and forward those to the
mail
new address.
Them to, yeah,
mail them to yourself. Forward them to yourself.
Yep. And we've been telling people to get off of Yahoo for several years now, especially since every single one of their 3 billion accounts was lost.
Right.
If you have a Yahoo email address, your password was lost, period.
Done. And if you didn't change it, then there are other people who could use your password. And if you use that password somewhere else, then they have access to that as well.
Yeah, I'm slowly trying to get my wife off her Yahoo account.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Changing your email password is worse than physically moving. Changing your postal
changing
address
your,
is easy.
Not your password, but your address.
Your address, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like I told her, start now. You know, see where you're getting all your emails from and send out a blast message to them. You know, email each one of them and tell them you're changing it over to Gmail. She's got her Gmail account. Just get it over there and get away from that stupid Yahoo.
Yep.
And some people take it as an opportunity to weed out their contacts. Don't tell people your new address.
Well, there's that, yeah. Yeah. Right. Start with your three closest actual living friends,
yep.
Not the people you just happen to know on Facebook. And then, of course, you got to go into all of those things like Facebook and whatever else you're on and change that address as well. I get it. It does take time and it does take effort, but it's better to do it now than when Yahoo goes out of business or AOL stops offering free email.
The other thing, though, is you also got to, you know, like if – any of these companies, say like RG&E or the phone company, send you reminders about this or that. You've got to go in to those accounts also. So it's not something, you know, again, you got to remember who you get all these notices from. Go through your list.
Which is why you do it now
right.
when that other email address still exists.
Yep.
And you can see it happening. And then once you've changed all of those over.
Yep.
You can put an automatic answer that says, you know, I'm not checking this account anymore. Email me at whatever.
Yep.
We had a customer come in a few weeks ago and their email suddenly stopped working. And it was their ISP's email address. I said, well, that's odd. So we, you know, tried digging around. And then, you know, we were like half an hour trying to log in and do the forgot my password thing. And then the customer finally said, well, yeah, I canceled that service about a year ago. I switched to a different ISP.
Yeah.
So the one thing was surprising is the mail worked for a year after the service was canceled.
That is odd.
That's very generous of that other ISP.
And so now that the old email is finally gone, you can't tell people you've changed your email address.
Right.
Because
it's
too
late at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I always tell people don't use your ISP's email address. Don't use rr.com or roadrunner.com or stny.com or any of those. Or you know, whatever, frontier.net or whatever, frontiernet.net or whatever it is. Don't use those, because if you change your internet service provider, at some point those email addresses will go away and it will then be too late to tell people, because they don't know and you can't reach them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If they're lucky, they get a bounce back.
Yeah, very lucky.
But if it's a business, they don't care. They're not gonna bother with it.
Or when that address gets reassigned to a new customer, they get all your mail.
They get all your mail. And what if that has a password restore in it or something along that line? Now, really, don't, you know, get an off ISP address. Gmail, Apple, Microsoft, I don't care which of those you use, but make it something that isn't likely to go away. And more importantly, something that isn't likely to be AOL or Yahoo anymore, I guess. Now, like I said, we're not saying that anything's going to happen to AOL or Yahoo. But the reality is that Verizon is a company that's in business to make money. And right now, at least, what we're seeing is that Yahoo and AOL are bleeding money. So Verizon is not particularly happy with them at the moment. So, you know, this is the canary in the coal mine. My suggestion is get yourself a Gmail address or an Apple.com.
iCloud.com.
iCloud, thank you. I knew it was an i-something. Cloud.com or Microsoft or .com.
You get an Outlook.com. Now, yeah, Microsoft is a little annoying, too, because it used to be Hotmail. And then it was live.com, and
right.
Now it's outlook.com.
Yeah, right, now it's Outlook.
Yeah, so
right,
Apple
right.
Started with mac.com, and then they went to me.com, and now it's iCloud.com.
Right.
As they changed their services.
Gmail has always been Gmail.
Gmail, yeah.
So, and Gmail, by the way, was written by a guy from Rochester.
Yep.
Douglas something or other, I think it was. I think it was. But, yeah, so at any rate, the idea is pick a neutral company to get your email from. The irony, of course, is that we would have said Yahoo and AOL until recently, but now with this, I personally take that as a canary in a coal mine. You know, it's the first whiff of sulfur. I would move off those I believe I do actually still have a Yahoo account.
I still have a couple that I keep.
I don't
just,
use it for anything, yeah. So I don't care. But I
when
think
someone
I
has
still
a problem with one of them, right, I have right, to log right, into right, mine right, and right. see. And it's always full of junk mail.
Right.
The I read on a blog posting once. Someone was looking through AOL's financials, and they still make I think it was millions of dollars a year on dial-up accounts.
Yes.
Because people forgot they're paying for AOL dial-up and it's free now.
The only way
actually, no,
I got
dial-up
off.
Is not free, but AOL is free on the internet from another right. service. Yeah,
but you might still check your bank statement. You still may be paying whatever is $15 a month or whatever yeah. for AOL. They wouldn't take me off.
Yep.
They're notorious for not getting you off. I actually had to close my account, my yep. checking account, in order to have. You know, and then they called me up and said, you haven't paid your account. I said, I canceled my account.
Yep. You get those past due notices.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of classic videos online of people trying to say cancel. There's one that's like 20 minutes. The guy's saying cancel. And the rep on the other end is trying to sell them and keep them on. I'll right. give you another free month. Cancel. Cancel.
Yeah.
Cancel.
Yep.
Well, and you know, one of the things we've heard is... The reps, it's terrible being a phone rep.
It's horrible. It's a horrible job.
You get
God bless each and every one of you. It's a horrible job.
You get perks when you make a sale, which was great, but you also get penalized when someone cancels.
Yep.
So if you can get them to not cancel, you don't risk the penalty.
Right.
So then you hope they hang up and call somebody else.
Right.
And heaven forbid they get you again.
Right.
Somebody wrote in and says, email, Frontier will let you keep the address for life free.
That's nice. That's a wonderful thing. Well done, Frontier. Well done. Well, then you don't have to worry if you've got a Frontier address. Good for you, Frontier.
Apparently that's a new service because that's who our customer was having problems with.
But that, if that's true, that's wonderful.
Yeah, that is. Rather generous of them.
And it makes sense. Cheese and crackers, how much storage space do they have, and how much are you going to use?
Well, and the problem is it's 99% spam, so your mailbox is constantly full of spam.
Yeah.
We often say, we sort of have a running tally in our office about the number of unread messages, and you find it in someone's mailbox. And I've seen a couple of people with over 100,000 unread messages. They read the two or three from the people they know, and they don't even bother deleting the rest
right.
of them.
And that's one of the things I like about Gmail. They've got excellent spam filters.
Yep. Yeah. Which, when you think about it, the spam you do get on Gmail that you're so frustrated about, just think about how much you didn't get.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's a lot.
A billion a day, I think I have read of them.
Something along that line. So, my phone. Oh, my goodness. I have the Pixel phone now, and Google mm-hmm. Assistant is on it now.
You like that?
So one thing it does is it was bringing up a thing that in big red banner says suspected spam if I got a call. But you can also go into the phone itself and say, if it's suspected spam, don't even tell me about it. Just dump it.
That's what
it's beautiful. Yeah, I told you about that last week.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, since I turned that on, because before that, I was getting all these, it says suspected spam mail or spam call. And I'd sit there, you know, swipe. I think I had five or six different states.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Calling me just in one day.
And a dozen in Rochester. I got a dozen in one day from Rochester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, yeah, they're spoofing it, making it look like it's local. And if it's not on my contact list, leave a message.
But if you have a Pixel phone right now, because right now that's the only thing I know that does this, you can both. It tells you it's suspected spam, and you can actually go into the phone settings and say if it's spam, if it's on your spam list, don't even show it to me. Just toss it.
Oh, at work, one of them went off just this past week. And, you know, we were all getting them in the office there. And I pull it up. And I said, it's another spam call. They go, oh, really? I said, I'm going to deal with this one. So I flipped it up and I go, Soundbites, can I take your question, please?
That's what I do. That's what I do a lot.
All of a sudden they hear click.
Yep.
They go, oh, that's a good one.
Well, there's another thing you can do on, again, Pixel phones right now because they have Google Assistant, which is one of the choices when someone calls your number is screen the call. And Google Assistant answers the phone and says, the person at this number is using Google Assistant to screen this call. Please state your name and your business.
Oh, I did not know that one.
Click.
Yep.
So I've been using that fairly regularly, too.
One of the problems is the spammers will spoof numbers, as we mentioned, but sometimes those spoof numbers are a real person.
Yeah.
And so we're hearing from our customers that people are calling them, stop spamming me. It wasn't me that someone randomly grabbed my phone number to put on your call ID.
Yeah, using that to look like it's a local call. And
right, somebody spoofing call ID is very easy now.
And completely illegal.
Yeah.
But they're already breaking the law, so what do they care?
Right. They don't care if it's illegal. So you want to be aware of those things. And again, if you've got a Pixel phone, right now, I believe that's the only Android phone that does this.
Hangouts does some of that too.
Hangouts does that. Google Voice does that, but that's all part of right.
No, because
if it's just your
Google
phone,
yeah.
If it's your actual phone number,
Google does that. I guess is the short answer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Right. And I do like that screening the call thing. I really enjoy.
I just like the fact that it just blocks all those stupid spam calls for me.
I was getting a dozen a day easily, if not more. And now, I see the red banner comes up and says suspected spam call. But now I don't even see those. I don't even get bothered by them.
Same here.
It's a much nicer life. Thank you, Google, for doing that for my phone. I very much appreciate that.
Well, that's the thing. Now that I'm, I can't have my phone going off like that that many times because now I'm in the dispatcher office.
Right.
And to have that, my phone constantly going off while I'm trying to talk over the radio, it's like, yeah, no, that can't happen. And these stupid spam calls, like I say, that one day before you showed me that other feature, that must have just come within the recent two updates.
Yes. Well, for me, it was the last update.
Yeah, 9.
You have a Pixel. You have a Pixel.
I have the original.
The same one I have.
I have the original.
It just came.
Yeah, it was 9. And that's the whole thing. Great about the Android phone, though. You know, they add so many other features, and they don't bloat you up with all that other junk. That's what I loved about the Google phone.
Yeah, now it's right behind you. So he sat down.
He's got the thing on his eyes now.
What are you doing to me?
You sat down, so then it was pointing at your bald spot. So now I'm trying to move the camera, but it's right behind the.
That's okay.
So you had the Jazz 90.1 thing on the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
It was right over your eyes. It was like we were hiding your identity.
That's best.
That's probably best. I know we like it that way. Yeah.
Hide behind it.
Oh, I hear music, and I hear singing, and there's no one there.
You got about 30 seconds.
We got about 30 seconds. We just want to we're going to take a quick break. It's the end of the first hour. We'll be back for a whole nother hour of Soundbites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Mina Francesco, and you 59 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, and the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported through your generosity. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1, WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we, and I know this is a shock to you, are Sound Bites. And we have Scotty from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Scotty. What's up?
Hi, guys. I really appreciate the show. You guys are keeping us safe. And you know, you guys were also talking about just this onslaught of spamming and barrage of unwanted calls.
Yep.
And I'd just like to remind the audience of what you spoke before about these intercept tones. And I added that to my outgoing message on my own phone service, my cell phone and my home phone. And my buddy and I, Dave, we always refer to that as Doodle D, you know, Doodle D.
Right.
And the just vacant circuit, you know. Sorry, we're not home, you know. And it just takes me off the list, and it just my volume of calls when I introduce that to my outgoing message, it knocked down the calls probably about, I'd say, over 50, maybe 60% of the calls just died.
Right. These are called special information tones, and there's actually a bunch of them. But the one that most people are using is, what do they call it? I forget what it's called.
Not in service, is it?
Not in service, maybe. But that's basically what it means. All circuits are busy. They have intercept. They have no circuit. And you can find these all online. Oh, yeah. Well, that's not
What's it called again? Special.
Special information tones is one.
That's it.
That's the one.
There we go. That's Doodle D.
Yeah, Doodle D. It's called a special information tone, and that one is called no circuit. And what that is the one that they play at the if you call a number that's no longer in service or not in service, you get that at the beginning before you get the message. And if you put that at the beginning of your answering machine message, whether it's an answering machine or it's in your phone, many of the spammers, the calls are automated, right? They're all just lined up robocalls. And the robocall gets that and says, oh, that's not a working number. I'm going to take it out of the list for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months. Because taking the time to dial it means I make that many fewer real calls. And so they take it out of the list. What?
Amen, brother.
Amen, brother. So for all those of you out there, you can find those online. I just looked up special information tone on Wikipedia. And they're all there. There's a bunch of them. That's call failure. It's slightly different. And it doesn't really matter which of those you use, actually. Number changed or disconnected is the intercept, and that's probably the one you want to use. Stop doing that.
You push it once and it plays twice.
Oh, does it? I thought that was you.
No,
that's you.
intercept is probably the one. Oh, it does go twice. Yeah.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah, and I learned that from you guys just by listening to your program.
Well, thank you. We're glad to hear that. Yeah, I have that on mine too. And then I say something insulting if you're a telemarketer. I can't tell you. It's easy to put that on your phone. Every phone lets you record a message, an outgoing message, right, or income, whatever they call that, a message for when you don't answer the phone. And my suggestion is if you put that at the beginning of that message, then it it cuts down significantly on the robocalls as well.
Oh, it works like a charm.
Excellent. Thanks. Love to hear that. Thanks, Scotty.
Yes, sir.
Have fun.
And
thanks.
And there might be a little bit of a respite because more than 50 people in India have been arrested in 26 call centers linked to telephone scams. Apparently, Microsoft put up a bunch of money and we're trying to help trace, because it's usually their fake Microsoft tech support. Microsoft says it gets about 11,000 calls a month in reports of fake calls from Microsoft.
Right.
So people are getting arrested. They actually got the scripts for how the bad guys keep you on the phone and scare you into thinking there's problems to get your money, and so it might cut back a little bit until the
for a day
gap,
or two
the gap yeah. fills in by everyone else. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Well, that just triggered a little bit of a memory. Back a few weeks ago, I got Apple support that kept calling my house like yep. 6-7 times a day.
Yeah, we're not sure if we're pleased that Apple is now mainstream enough that they are being abused as fake calls. We always got a kick out of since we sell mostly Macs, most of our customers are Apple users, and they'll get the fake Microsoft calls and believe them, even though they don't have anything from Microsoft.
Right.
So we sort of got a kick out of someone who brought in a Windows PC because Apple called him and he had a problem.
Nice.
Well, after I blocked the call like 4 or 5 times, they just kept changing the number.
Right. Yep.
And they would have incorporated Apple first, and Apple Incorporated, then just Apple, and they would keep changing it. So finally I picked up, and the person came on, and they said that I, you know, had this problem, and I said, okay, now how do I access that on my Chromebook?
Yeah.
Well, yep. I know some people that will try to keep them online as long as they can, so they're not scamming somebody who doesn't know better.
Yeah,
but as soon as they said, how do I do that on a Chromebook, and they just hung up on me.
Yeah,
so, exactly right.
By the way, why I called is I ended up getting a new email address, and I got mine through a company that's like freemium. It's called mail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they have a ton of different dot, you know, whatever
right.
that you can use if you're in music business or technology or, you know, they have a ton of those that you can pick. And if you use the free service, you may get an email or two from them a week telling you about some sort of offer they have.
Yeah, right.
I've had it for like 6 months, and I think I've only gotten, like I said, maybe one a week, maybe two a week. Sometimes a week goes by, I don't get any.
Yep, yep.
So for having it free, it really isn't a problem, and there's a ton of different ones you can use in there.
Excellent.
And it incorporated into Thunderbird fine.
Nice.
Perfect.
Yep.
So, and their web interface is spectacular.
Good to hear. Excellent. So, thanks, Mark.
I just wanted to throw that out to you.
Mail.com. Good tip. Thanks.
Yep.
And there's a lot of new top-level domains that you can find something you're interested in, or if you have $200,000, you can have a custom domain proposed.
That's nice.
Yeah. And so
$200,000.
I think that's what it is, yeah.
Not bad.
One of the bloggers I listen to online, his domain is chihuahua.coffee.
Nice.
So the joke is he does have chihuahuas, but he doesn't give them coffee because they're antsy enough as is.
You're
Can
never,
you imagine yeah. a chihuahua on coffee?
No. No, cheese and crackers. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. Hi, Bodan. What's up?
Hey, guys. Good. to you guys. My computer did an update this morning, all by itself, probably an automatic one. And now I've got a I got a new icon on the desktop. It says Windows 10 Update Assistant. When I double click on it, the first thing that happens is a little warning says, "Do you want to allow this app to make changes to your device, Microsoft Windows, file origin, hard drive on the computer?" What is this? Are you guys familiar with Windows 10 Update Assistant?
That is probably the 1809 update, wanting to come, the feature update rather than the security update. They are slowly rolling it out. So that was the November update that I think finally came out in December. And they've been slowly rolling it out. They think they have all the bugs worked out, but it has part of the update assistant is it will scan your machine for any known incompatibilities before it tries to install.
Right.
Okay, so, any other future updates you mean install? Is that correct?
No, it's probably that 1809 update is ready to install.
Yeah.
Right.
So the question is this: when it says, "Do you want to allow this app to make changes to your device?" I have not clicked on the yes button. Should I?
It is a it is a legitimate Microsoft program.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is: do you want the 1809 update? If you do, click yes. If you do not, click no.
And what is the 1809 update? It's a million things. Windows 10 upgrade. Windows 10 upgrade. APE.exe.
There's
probably a list somewhere.
Yeah,
Edge. A big issue is back up everything first. In the early 1809 patch updates that they pulled back, they'd had an annoying habit of deleting everything in your My Documents folder.
Okay.
So, yeah, the various bugs first. They say are now fixed. And they want everyone to update, which is why you get the update assistant on your desktop. They want everybody at the latest version. It does have some good security updates. I don't want to be first. I'd wait another few days at least.
They have added a phone app that will help link your Android phone pictures. So if you're not using a Windows phone,
right,
you can automatically sync the pictures from your Android phone.
Well, I mean, it's just a lot of frosting on the cupcake. When, you know, for me, basically, who cares? I mean, security thing is an important thing, but I think I'm going to wait before I hit that yes button.
These are more feature updates than security updates.
I'd personally, as I always say, I don't want to be first.
Yeah.
So let you know. There's lists online where you can read about what all the updates features are. But
Microsoft has a 3-minute video.
Like we've always said, you can always tell the pioneers they have the arrows in their back.
Yeah.
Well,
Adam Osborne said
interesting
that.
Thing is that 1809 means it's the September 2018 update.
Right.
And we finally got the bugs worked out of it.
Well, and that's just it. They released it in September, and it
bombed terribly.
And then they did it in October, and it borked. And then they did it in November, and it borked. And now they're saying in December, it really works. It really, really, really works.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because the 12th was the second Tuesday.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would not be first, and I'd start watching the reports.
Matter of fact, I don't know if you say no, it might ask you if you want to delay it until...
Well,
no, that's, when I click no, it just, box goes away.
If you are running a Windows 10 Home, there's no way to stop it. If you are running Windows 10 Pro, and I'll find those settings.
Home. I have Home.
Yeah. So in Windows 10 Pro, you can turn off checking for updates. And separate it between security updates and feature updates.
Okay. But in Windows, I have the Home version.
Yeah, in Home, it's you get the updates whether you want them or not.
Okay. Yeah, eventually it will install.
Well, I'm gonna delay hitting the yes box. So unless I sense there's issues or whatever like that.
Right. Good idea.
Alrighty, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, have fun. Yeah, Microsoft really, really wants everybody on Windows 10. They really, really want everybody on the latest Windows 10. And so they're making it harder and harder for you to say no. And as Steve said, at some point they just will install it and heck with you. So you want to be a little more aware of that will be happening, which is why you make backups, by the way. Let's talk for a minute about backups. You don't have enough of them. Even if you have backups, You don't have enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
So make a backup. Make sure you have automated backups that work every single day. Whether you leave your machine on and it happens overnight, or it happens, you know, when you turn your machine on and happens in the back. I don't care. Make backups and make sure that they are good backups and make sure that they are recent backups.
People often ask us, how often should I back up? And the answer is, how much do you want to lose?
Right.
If you don't mind losing a month's worth of your work, you can back up once a month.
Yeah. Right. That's exactly right. I like I said, I do 99% of my work in Google Docs now.
Cloud.
So I don't even care. But once in a while, and it's pretty much weekly, I admit it. And that's the problem, of course, is that you're doing it by hand, and humans are human. But about once a week, I download everything.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to takeout.google.com and decide what you want to get. And so I usually, you know, I'm almost always working only in Docs, stock spreadsheets, presentations. So I download those, and I'm good. And you don't have to think twice about it. And then I stick it on a thumb drive and take it off my machine. And I know that, you know, like Steve said, I have a week of vulnerability. That's not a problem for me at this point.
Yeah, but a lot of it, like you said, you're doing it up there in the cloud, so it's backed up there too.
Right.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that there are a lot of cloud syncing services. Syncing is not backup.
Right.
If you delete a file, that change is synced, and the file is deleted from the cloud. Now, Google Docs has a revision history.
Right.
As part of their sync. So you can go back in time and find the revision before you made that horrible left turn into the dark and stormy night. but not all cloud syncing services have that. So you make sure you understand the difference between sync and backup.
All right. We had somebody else text us in and it says, have you heard anything more about Greenlight's planned rollout timetable for the east side towns like Fairport, Webster, Victor, and et cetera?
I know they're working through Fairport. They're coming down Mosley Road from the north. They're about a mile from my house. I'm waiting for them to come up. Yeah. One thing they have recently done is they upped their standard speed. So now it's 500 megabit. Half a gig is standard. And that's mostly because cable is now offering 100 megabit. So when cable was 10, Greenlight was 100. That's a big change. So now cable is 100, green light is 500. So
that's still a big change.
That's still a big change.
Not as big.
But it's not as widespread. But I see, you know, I see their map. Oh, expansion networks. Yeah, I'll find that.
Yeah.
So they have a list of their expansion. One of the things on there is you have to know the name of your district.
I was just about to say that. They've got weird names for the districts. God bless you folks at Greenlight. I love Greenlight.
Well, that's on the town plans. If you look at a town map, those are the names of the plans.
Yeah, I don't know those, though. But okay, so we're the Irondequoit Gold Coast. I don't even know what that means, but they're 100% of gold. So, and construction is in progress. So they do have a page. Steve's going to put it up, but it's greenlightnetworks.com/expansion-plans. And it is their, shockingly, Greenlight Networks expansion plans. And it shows all the neighborhoods they're in and all the neighborhoods they're going to and how they stand in terms of percentage of goal. And it looks like Fairport is 100%, Irondequoit is 100%.
Well, now, and that's one of the tricks. Not the right word. It's 100% of their goal to get in the town.
That's the whole thing, though.
Run.
Well, once it comes to construction in progress.
Yeah, but once it comes to your area, like right now, they have a zone for me mapped out.
Yep.
And it's how many folks you've got to go around and tell folks, because other folks don't always, you know, keep up on stuff, know that green light's in that area. You've got to go around to your neighbors in that and tell them to sign up. Because that's what generates the interest and gets them to come into that segment.
Right.
Because right now, even though I'm on Empire, my zone is called Pardee. And that's one of the side streets. And it goes back towards Norton Street. Trying to get all, you know, you got to try to get all those folks back in that area to show an interest to get them to even come back into that area.
And even when they get that, now they have easements that they have to get. The rights of way are owned by Frontier and Spectrum, so getting the ability to have right of way is not terrifically easy. And so, you know, there's a bunch of expansions and a bunch of new districts. And
they have to ask each town individually when you cross a town line.
Right. So it's not tremendously easy, but they are working at it. And as I said, there's a page that Steve did put up, is putting up.
Yeah.
That will show you where each of those things is. And then you just have to figure out which actual.
And I'm looking for a Monroe County, to start with, at least, zoning map to tell you what neighborhood you're in. So according to the I live in Fairport, and the Fairport Heatherstone area, they're at 100%. I don't live in the Heatherstone area. I don't know where the Heatherstone area is.
Right, but it's not you, and you
but
know
it's not
that
me.
Much.
Yeah,
yeah. And construction is actually in progress there. So if you're if somebody listening just went, I live on Heatherstone. Excellent.
Right. It's not necessarily the street name. Too.
Right. It
could be
right.
An area. Yeah. It was the early surveyor or settler.
Right. It's whoever. It's what. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Whoever found it gets to name it.
Right. The Rochester Queens area. I don't know. I don't know what that is. I mean, I get,
if
you know.
If there's a Queens, does that mean there's a Brooklyn, too?
Right, exactly. I don't know. Obviously, I know some of these. Rochester Swillburg. Okay, I know where Swillburg is. I know where Upper Monroe is. I know where Upper Highland is. I know where Marsden. I know where Lower Highland. I get those. I don't know where Shalott Turning Point is.
I do. Turning Point Park.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it's
right
down near Boxart Street.
Yep. Yeah, you're only at 28%, and I hope they're not including the massive amount of actual park.
Yeah.
They're not doing it by acreage.
See, that's where the boats would come down the river and have to turn around.
Right.
After they unloaded their cargo.
Right. So,
unimaginatively, it got named Turning Point Park.
Exactly. So definitely you want to have some idea of what area you're in, and then you can check that map which Steve is putting up that will. Not map, the list that Steve is putting up that will show you what you're doing. And I'll say it again. I love Greenlight. I love it. I love it. Thank you. Thank you very much. I know you meant that from the heart, or at least from the middle knuckle of your left hand. I know. All right, we got a couple minutes. Let's talk to Andy from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Maybe Linda called in earlier.
Yeah.
About her new Mac that she was kind of having.
Yeah.
Just getting herself up on the learning curve. She's in Greece. Up at the community center, even if she can't get out to go to the groups, if she could get a hold of the senior center, there might be some people who live near her. I don't know if she lives in a senior housing area or whatever, or she's on an individual house or something, but. Yeah, there might be somebody nearby her that would be willing to come over and share a cup of coffee and get her through at least the initial startup so that she could get to the all the manuals that Steve was talking about and get her screen big enough so that she can read it.
Excellent idea, Andy. Thank you.
Because I would think with a 27-inch screen, you can get the font big enough to read.
Yeah.
There's certainly
well, for most people, yes.
And you can make it really, really small. So that's a 5K display. So you can do all 5,000 pixels across if you want at a 1-to-1.
I don't need to challenge my visual acuity. It's already challenged.
Yeah.
The other thing was the gentleman who called in about the tones. I tried those and mixed results. But the thing that helped me the most with those junk calls is when I switched my phone service to Spectrum, when I bundled everything, Nomo Robo is no charge. And that thing works like a champ.
Yeah, right. No charge for landlines, and there's a small fee for cell phones. The one thing that you have to get around is that they are answering all your phone calls and then passing on the legitimate ones to you.
Right.
They're a reputable company. You haven't heard anything bad about them. I just don't know if I like that.
No, they're basically, their computer system is looking at the number that's incoming, comparing it against... Yep. The speed of computers. Comparing against their known list of junk calls.
Right.
And then if it's on that list, it goes away after one ring. We get anywhere from 3 to 5 one-ring calls a day at our house. The one that kind of irritates me is when they spoof a local number, then it doesn't wind up showing up. And lately I've been getting calls for back braces and Hilton and Marriott. And they all come through as 585-613 numbers, which is my general area.
Right.
But it's kind of like, really, guys? And
right.
So, and the cell phone I've got.
Andy, I'm sorry, Andy. We got to take a break. We got to take a break. Thanks, Andy.
Okay.
We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites member supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And for some reason, oh, I see what happened. I confused my computer. And we have Larry from Penfield on the line. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Hi, guys. Hey, several weeks ago, I called and asked about making the transition from Windows to Chromebook, which I have done. And now I'm struggling with the transition both to the Chromebook and the touchpad instead of a mouse. So I've got a general problem and a couple examples of where I'm having that problem. And the problem is I can't seem to find any good up-to-date information either on the machine or online or anywhere else, because when I put in my question, the information they show doesn't match what I'm looking at on my screen, which makes it a little dicey to try and figure out what they're talking about.
Right.
For one example, I can't expand a selection. In other words, if I select a word or a line, I can't expand it into a paragraph or multiples of paragraphs. Another one is I can't move a window with a touchpad, but I can if I touch it with my finger and move it around. And lastly, I can't take a screenshot of a partial window, even though I do what the instructions say to do. So I need some up-to-date information, apparently.
Sure. Okay, let's start with a couple of points. In order to do some of the stuff you want to do, you need to use multi-touch, which is built in. And so you, for example, with one hand, you press on the keyboard, which is the mouse down, and then with the other hand, you move your finger, which is like moving the mouse after you've clicked the button.
Mm-hmm.
But let's back up a step. You can plug a mouse into a Chromebook.
Right, but I was trying to make the transition so I could not have to monkey with the mouse. I could go back to the mouse, but then it's one extra thing to carry around with me or mess with. So,
yeah, it takes a little bit of getting used to with the multi-touch trackpads where you tap it and it does one thing, you press it does another thing, you press it harder and it does a third thing.
The information I found is it seemed very sketchy. It doesn't give you enough detail to know what to do.
It can depend on exactly which Chromebook you have and what version of the OS.
Mm.
Right. There is stuff online that will help you. Chromebook Help. We'll talk about using how to close tabs and drag and drop and things you can do to do stuff. So you press or tap with two fingers is a right click, and two fingers and moving them up and down will scroll you vertically, or left to right it scrolls you horizontally. And
dragging is probably one of the trickiest things, where you tap with one finger and then use a second finger to actually move the window around. Well, yeah, second finger on the same hand or second finger on the other.
Right.
Hand.
So what I do is I tap with my thumb and then use my index finger.
Yep. To actually do the dragging.
To actually move it around, yeah. But yes, I agree with you. It is that's of course a separation from the Chromebook itself. But it is a skill that is that at
an acquired skill.
It is annoying to acquire.
Yeah.
I agree.
But it's
you can
there,
also, by the way, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But I would say it's there, though.
I mean, it's there.
But if you find it too difficult, at least you're not blocked out. And like you said, use a mouse.
Right. And in terms of selecting a word versus a sentence versus a paragraph, a double click will select a word. Triple click will select a paragraph.
Okay.
Oh, bang, bang, bang. And it's got to be, fast, but not moving the mouse in between and all that, yada, yada, yada. But a double click selects a word, a triple click selects a paragraph.
How about a quadruple click?
You go back, I think, to...
No, I was wondering if that would do the whole page.
Three. No, that was just three you hit. Yeah, you go back to nothing.
On mine,
a Chromebook, you go back to nothing.
On mine, it just does a paragraph, so there's nothing beyond paragraph.
Right. So those things are possible. And what I'll do is I'll look for some more of those types of things.
Would that be in your Chromebook that you wrote, Nick?
Those would not be. And that's why I'm thinking there's another.
You need to revise that book.
A newer book with tips and tricks.
Yeah. I think so. So I will definitely, look into doing that. But you're right. The thing I didn't think about was that a touchpad is a very different skill set than a mouse. And like I said, you can plug in a mouse. So if you really need to do some serious work, then you can absolutely use a regular mouse. As you're still learning, so you don't get frustrated. So as you're still learning,
and use a cordless one.
And you can use a cordless one.
I do that. That's what I've had. And I've been using a mouse probably for 30 years, so it's a little ingrained.
Right. I get that. I do. You certainly can use a mouse. And like Dave said, you can use a Bluetooth mouse or a wired mouse. Doesn't matter. But you're right. It doesn't hurt to learn to use the touchpad more. I've been using one for years, and I didn't even think about the fact that at some point, I had to learn to do all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now it's just second nature.
That's new language, right?
Right.
Yeah. Everything else.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys, and keep up the good work.
Yep. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. We had another person call, text in, and says, "Hi, guys. Used to use Picasa 3 for simple photo editing and selecting photos to burn to CD and DVD. Now I can't even use it to attach small photos for email. Google Photos is a weak alternative for Picasa 3. What are the latest and best choices for free, easy to use photo editing software? Thanks, Doug from Arundhati."
Well, Doug, without knowing what operating system you're on, that's a little hard. But what I will do is assume you're on Windows, because most people who are on Windows don't bother to tell you what operating system they're running. So there are many alternatives to Picasa, but it depends on what you want to do. If you're just looking for an image viewer that lets you move files back and forth, and maybe it's not an organizer, but UrfanView will do that. If you're looking for an organizer, then there's Digicam, XNView.
GIMP.
The GIMP is not an organizer. Shotwell.
Picasa was an editor, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
It's an editor and an organizer, and
discontinued, if I remember right.
Well, they've turned it into Google Photos.
Right, but the Picasa app itself got turned off and stopped.
Right.
Which is why it stops working, right?
Right.
So probably some... Google even has a... website on... they decided to retire Picasa in order to focus on a single program. Yeah, right. But it doesn't do as much as the old one did.
Right. There are some. There are a number of photo organizers for Windows 10. But again, without knowing specifically what it is you miss of Picasa, I can tell you that they have names like Magix, M-A-G-I-X, the Magix Photo Manager. There's Adobe Bridge, which I don't.
Not free.
Not
well,
free.
It's included free when you buy another Adobe product.
Right.
So that's why it might show up on a free list.
Right. Digicam, D-I-J-I-K-A-M, Digicam Photo Manager. Nikon View, of course. Fastone, XN View, Pikajet. Digital Photo icon. Management. And Pictomio and things like that. There's an article. I don't know how recent this is.
Yeah, I'm finding a bunch that are old.
But it wouldn't be a bad idea to take a look at some of those, and see and now you, of course you're gonna have to look through and see if they do the things you want done. Picasa did a whole bunch of things, so the question is, do any of these do the thing you want done? So make a list of the stuff you need to do, and you can easily find alternatives and then look through them and find the one that does what you want. I wish I had a better answer for you, but I do not.
But fortunately, they're all free, the ones we've been mentioning. So you can download them all, try them all, see which one you like the best.
Well, that's exactly right. It's a little bit of work, but it'll certainly happen. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Scott from Webster, New York. Hi, Scott. What's up?
Hi, guys. I caught the tail end of one of your shows last week or the week before, and you were talking about Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
And I looked into that a little bit. I'm retired. I got some free time on my hands, and I wanted to learn a little bit more about computers and what makes them work. Is that something an old guy might want to even participate in? And how do you get more information on it?
Okay, couple of things. First, I'm 68 years old, and I just got my second Raspberry Pi. I think they're wonderful little devices for learning and playing around with. One thing is they run Linux much better than they run Windows. Well, that's true of every computer. But it means you get to learn Linux, too, which is kind of fun. There's lots and lots of stuff online, a lot of YouTube videos. There's books. I don't know if there's a local users group that does anything with the Raspberry Pi. If there isn't, somebody's listening, give me a call. Probably somebody at the Makerspace does, probably. But Raspberry Pi is a pretty simple toy. You can get started for well under $100, assuming you've already got a monitor that you can use or plug it into your TV or whatever that is. You need the Raspberry Pi itself. If you want to spend the $20 or whatever it is on a case, that's good too. You need a power supply. And then you need a keyboard and a mouse. But again, if you've got extra of those sitting around, and you need a monitor, but if you got an extra one of those sitting around, or just
hook
another
it up to a TV,
another you're right, another USB cable to hook it up and just change inputs on your television, you can get a Raspberry Pi set up pretty quickly, pretty easily. There are kits available from places like CanaKit, CanaKit.com, I believe it is. You can also go to RaspberryPi.org and a bunch of other places and find lots and lots of stuff that's available for the Raspberry Pi, including books and like I said, online tutorials are there by
YouTube's,
the millions.
YouTube's got tons of them.
So yeah, I think it's a fun little hobby. It's a fun little toy. You get into it for anywhere from 100 to 100, you know, under 100 to $150. So you're not spending a lot of money, and you're finding that you've got a lot of fun on your hands.
And the CanaKit people have a Raspberry Pi kit for dummies, apparently in conjunction with the dummies people.
Right, with the book people.
With the book people, yeah. And so it comes with all the hardware and books and power supply and case and Wi-Fi card and jumpers and breadboards. And so you basically can do hardware projects. So once you learn the software, you can do cute little hardware projects too. Make the lights blink.
Yeah.
Gotta make it sing Daisy.
You make it sing Daisy, and that's important. You can actually use a Raspberry Pi and sort of turn it into I forget if it's an Echo Show or a Google. I think it's Google Home.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very cool, and it does lots and lots of stuff. So you should be able to figure out fairly easily how to play with this new toy. And like Steve said, if you get the Raspberry Pi for Dummies kit, it's about $90, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it includes a book with stuff to do and just all kinds of fun things.
You know, we're going to have to do a disclaimer, though. This show and station cannot be held responsible for any loss of sleep.
Yeah, you're right, right, right.
Not talking to your spouse
for the
because
the pain
you are
in your face
so,
you're smiling so much because
you're so zoned out trying to learn this device because it is a lot of fun and you can lose yourself.
Right.
Right. She wants me to be busy doing something constructive, so that might
There you go. Yep. Enjoy.
Right. Shut up and go in the other room.
Can you repeat
alone.
The Kennekit again? It's an online.
Right. Canakit. I think it's .com.
Yeah.
Canakit.com. Okay.
It's on our link list from last week.
And it's on our link list from last week. Canakit. Canakit. And there's lots of stuff there. The one thing we were talking about just at the moment was the Raspberry Pi for Dummies kit, which includes the book, the entire thing you need to run the computer, except, of course, for the keyboard and mouse and monitor. And a bunch of LEDs and things to play with, and it's very cool.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
LEDs and push buttons and resistors. Oh, my.
Oh, my. It's a lot of cool stuff.
There's resistors. And, oh, my.
Oh, my. Exactly. Exactly. And it's a very cool toy, and you can do real things with it. I mean, I know people who use it as their Minecraft servers.
Yeah.
You know? So those are the kinds of things that you know, it's not just a toy. It's a real computer. It's a 2 gigahertz quad core, blah, 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 blah. So there's a lot of cool stuff in it. Our next caller is our friend Scott from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Scott. What's up?
Well, recapture. That is, I've been trying to sign into a new email account, nmail.com, and I'm going through everything until they tell me the button says I'm not a robot.
Right.
And I have gone through 20 of these recapture things, and none of them are right. They don't stop taking me through that.
Yeah, you must be missing one. Click all the pictures of a bus, and in one of those squares is a little tiny corner where there's a picture of a bus, and you have to get them all. Fortunately, Google's working on a new version 3 of that reCAPTCHA that's supposed to be even better. But for now, we're kind of stuck with those picture things.
Yeah, it just says I am a robot. I'm not a robot.
But sometimes after you click that, it brings up the pictures.
Yeah, pictures.
A grid of pictures where you have to select all the pictures of a car, or select all the pictures of a street sign.
And you might not, it might be in a corner.
Yeah.
It keeps changing, and the light post, like everything which has a light post, or even the pole of a light post in it, it doesn't work.
I don't know what to tell you.
Light post. I don't know. It's driving me nuts.
Yep. Well, no, I get it. CAPTCHA and the reCAPTCHA thing that Google does is a brilliant idea, but doggone it, it's a pain in the neck. And particularly if you don't have good eyesight, particularly if the pictures are just not big enough, quite frankly, for a lot of people. The other thing you can do is often they will have a thing that says an alternative method, like tell me a word and I'll type it in or whatever it might be. There's often
equation,
a button, right? Or a math equation.
That might be wrong. Yeah.
Don't do math. Whatever you do, don't do math. So you may find that somewhere on that underneath the pictures is a list that mentions some sort of alternative method for getting verified.
Well, I hope so. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Yep.
Right, guys.
Thanks. Sorry. Bye.
Apparently, CAPTCHA was a backronym. I'm trying to find out what they made it stand for.
But that reCAPTCHA thing is the thing you find that says I'm not a robot, or pick all the dogs out of these pictures, or you know, type in this weirdly. Yeah.
Completely automated public Turing test to tell computers apart, to tell computers and humans apart. CAPTCHA.
Supposedly.
That's a backronym, all right.
Allegedly.
Yeah. But yeah, so they're a very good thing. I've used them on websites myself. But they can be frustrating because often they just don't look like anything you've ever actually seen. And yeah, sometimes the pictures are small or blurry. And if you don't have a very large monitor or you've got a visual impairment of some sort, that's why I say for Scott, it may have a thing where it will talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you type in what it tells you to type in. And that might be more useful, assuming that your ears are better than your eyes, which isn't necessarily the case in my case. But yeah, so I recommend seeing if there's an alternative method for that.
There was a cartoon I saw a while ago about an office cubicle
and
the human walking down the aisle, and the computer leans out and says, "Hey, Phil, can you push this button for me?"
Says, yeah. Then it says, "I'm not a robot."
I'm not a robot because robot's sitting there and can't push the button.
Right. But yeah, so there's a lot of that. I have a couple of sites where people can send me feedback, and I'm always getting spam at that one. It's just mildly annoying, but I don't much care really. And so having a reCAPTCHA on that would, of course, make it a little easier. Yeah, that's the one. It might make it a little easier, at least. And so people are doing that quite regularly now. All right, that music tells me we're done. We're done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. We had that happen last week as well. Somebody called in at the last moment. Can't take calls at the last moment. We've got another show coming in. That's George, by the way, so don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. Dave Enright will be here. Steve Ray will be here. Nick Francesco will be here. Rumballs will be here. And we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours.